Yo. Hey. Can you hear me?
You listening to #WAW. What a week.
Taking a cue from a certain minister of utility, a utility, we can tell you that the show will end, but we won't tell you when it will end. We can't. However, in the meantime, we'll have some cool guests, a couple of laughs, and even some info that won't leave you completely in the dark. Welcome back to Wow, What a Week.
This is
Wow, What a Week.
What a week. You can't make this shit up.
Our comedy guest this week is a man who can entertain people from different communities and areas. A man who can rock an afro and gray hair at this damn same time. A man who can walk the talk even if his toes aren't that pretty. A man who's sometimes a woman named Auntie Merle. Please give a wild welcome to the inimitable, the effervescent, the incredible Mark Lottering.
Wow, you just called me a woman with ugly toes. What a welcome.
And peppercorns on your head.
I have a thing about toes. I judge my toes very harshly, but I judge other people who wear sandals.
Yeah.
I have harsh judgment for people who wear sandals.
What is wrong with us?
Oh, is it us? Do you have a problem with your toes? No. You more than likely have nice feet then. Yes, you do. I can see you very comfortable. You're sitting there going.
Is it my posture?
I got great feet, yeah.
Or is it the sitting like I'm at the back of an Uber Black, your posture?
Like that. Pretty much like that. I think if you don't have great toes, you deserve to tell someone before you get into bed with someone.
Yes.
You deserve to let that person know.
Oh, that your toes are not
good. No, I'm coming from a traumatic past here, but yeah. Yeah, nobody should be surprised, you know?
Is that why you committed to the first guy that tolerated your toes? Toleration, if you will.
Sure, there have been several, but yeah.
Are you hard on yourself, though? Like, genuinely?
I am hard on myself. You know, last week, we're doing the show at Monte Casino, and I thought it was a really, really... I had a shit time on stage because it was hard work.
Jeez, okay.
And I, you know, in the first 10 minutes,
yeah.
This is going to be beautiful. It's going to be a dance with me and the audience. You know that in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
The flip side of that coin is you go, oh, this is going to be 1.5 hours of work. We're going to work tonight. These people are sitting with their arms folded and going, we took our debit order money to come and watch you. This had better be worth our while. So that's what I felt. And then when I got backstage, my partner Anwar was also my director.
Yes.
He came, and this has happened many times before. He came into the dressing room and went, wow, that was amazing. And for 1.5 hours, I was judging myself very differently on stage. So I think for every comedian, you know, you can be quite harsh and hard on yourself.
So when that happens, where you feel within the first 10 minutes of a show that, oh shit, it's going to be one of those shows, what happens with the audience or in the audience that might turn that around for you?
Usually it follows on from a rock and roll audience in the previous night. And in that particular instance, we had about 3 audiences that were just screaming. I mean, the Joburg people have been so fantastic. And they were... It literally was rock and roll, and they were carrying me.
Oh, wow.
And that's every comic's dream to be carried. And when people carry you, on that night, you can try the new outrageous gags that you've never tried before, and you can feel safe with them. So that had happened prior to this listening audience coming in. It just felt like more than half the audience had degrees, and they were there to watch the craft of comedy. So, but that was my feeling. And often what we feel on stage, you know, clearly when I come backstage and I hear from the director that it was amazing. So, yeah, it's not always a true reflection of what's going on out there.
Yes, sir.
But the sound of laughter and the sound of people screaming with laughter, there's not enough money for that.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and I feel blessed and spoiled when that happens.
Quickly, please tell us about this new show at Monty.
It's called So I Wrote That Musical, and it's because I've written this trilogy of the Auntie Mole musicals.
Yes.
I've written a musical around my character Auntie Mole, and it was a very different experience because suddenly I had 25 people on stage with me every night.
Yes.
Which is just bizarre for a stand-up comedian, because usually, you know, I tell the audience in this show, it's a lonely life. The only great thing about being a stand-up comedian is when you bow, then you know, I'm not sharing this money.
Yes.
It's just me on stage. I'm not splitting the check. Look at God.
If I could bow facing there and saying, kiss my ass, I want to spend my life on you.
Sometimes you feel like bowing the other way and thinking exactly that, even if you're in a tough audience. I might just do that. Thank you. I'll tell people you asked me to do it.
You're welcome.
For research, you asked me to do it. So, wow, now I can't stop thinking about this. I think if it's a bad audience, every comic should be allowed to face the other way.
Yes.
Yeah, you read the signs correctly. So, and then suddenly there was this musical. And you know, I think the first one I started writing about 5 years back. And, man, it took off.
Yeah.
And I wrote all the songs, which people don't believe. My friends refuse to believe that I wrote the songs.
I watched the previous one at the Joburg Theatre.
Oh, yes.
That was amazing.
Surely you're referring to the one for which I won an Aledi Award. Is that the one you referred to?
That is the one. But it's incredible, the writing, the music, the bridges, like, carry you. Like, even if the song was just okay for you, when it gets to the bridge, you're like, oh, shit, is this where we're going?
You'll be amazed how much good music you can write when you have one box of white wine in your room. I mean, so, and I came out of the room, and I love music, much like you.
Yes, sir.
And I think you, if you love music a lot, you also grow accustomed to what you really enjoy listening to. So, it's an absolute pleasure for me to write music. But it took off, and people came to watch. Until we eventually wrote the third segment, and that show's coming to Joburg in Feb. It's called Auntie Mole, Things Get Real. And I feel it's like the end of a trilogy. But the stand-up show came out of that because, firstly, people were, the Baxter was pushing me for a title.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, let's just call it So I Wrote That Musical, and I'll write material around the difference in the world of being the stand-up comic and then suddenly being in the world of musicals. Mm. But that's just one segment of the show, and we were just looking for a sexy caption to a show, as one does. So so it covers topical issues, and it talks about me straddling the two worlds.
Now, you speak of the Baxter. You have quite a relationship with the Baxter Theatre. In fact, when you go into the Baxter Theatre, especially backstage, you know, there's pictures of greats like Barney Simon, John Carney, but your pictures are also there. Do you ever
hear what this guy said? There are pictures of greats, but then how did the photocopy of your photo that you framed yourself and put in your bag and stuck on the backs of the corridors of plastic?
No, but the point I'm making though is, do you ever walk into that iconic theater and pinch yourself that I'm amongst greats here? Because every time I'm there, I spend half the time just looking at these pictures of all these greats, half of whom people have never really appreciated the art and what they've brought to the arts.
Yeah, and that's always true, hey? Once people leave us,
yes,
then only do we realize what they brought to the table. But I pinch myself very regularly, even when I'm on that stage, because the thing is, in that sometimes I look across that audience and, you know, they've got these different levels, and when it's sold out, you stand there. And for all the actors, it's quite a thing, because it's a privilege to be. But for me, I see myself with no hair being an usher in that very theatre. That's where I worked for 6 years, showing people where to sit.
How old were you at the time?
Sure. I must have been about 58. And then, I was a student at UCT, so I was in my 20s.
Sure.
So I was showing people where to sit. So that's where the first pinch comes in. Okay. I never forget that.
So it's like full circle, really.
It's full circle. And that's why I always, you know, I have a lot of time for ushers and always chatting to them at the theater, because I know what it felt like. Because people often just, you know, they treat you like nothing. You're just tearing a ticket and off you go.
Yeah.
So I do pinch myself. And when those pictures are back there, amongst the greats, I always think I'm in over my head. sometimes, I don't think I'm the only one who thinks that. I've got close friends in the industry.
Yes.
And we have these conversations after our third tequila.
Yeah.
Where we go, how are we getting away with this?
It's like this is us.
We're in over our heads. People are using strange adjectives when they talk about us. They use words like genre.
Yes.
You know, when they
imitable.
Yes.
Effervescent.
But then you get to chat to friends who know you, and they just introduce you as a woman with ugly toes. So it's important on the subject of toes to stay grounded. Thank you.
Let's talk about the evolution of Auntie Mel. Do you remember the first time we ever met, me and you?
Yes, I do.
The first time me and you met...
On the side at the theater. It was... In the small theater.
It was 23, 24 years ago. I was dating your friend, Mushidi.
You were dating Mushidi.
And she said, let's go watch Mark's show. It's like, who the fuck is this Mark, man? It's like, I hope he's not an ex.
Yeah. And you were comforted by when you saw me. No, definitely not an ex.
No. So we walk into literally the little theater behind the Joburg.
Yes.
And that's the first time I met you, and I was introduced to Auntie Merle. Oh, yeah. And then I realized that, okay, he's not a threat.
Yeah, he's not a threat. Well, it could be a cover. My brother always says, I feel so sorry for these guys who just assume that you're gay. Because you're in there with their girls and like, yeah, Mark is just so fabulous. I'm so comfortable with Mark.
Now, looking back at the last 25 years...
That's 24 years back, right? Wow.
Looking back at the last 25, 26 years of Auntie Merle's growth and evolution, was she supposed to live this long?
No. That was... when you saw me, I was trying stuff out.
Yes.
And the character allowed me to say things that were just outrageous. You know, because if you're going to be on stage and talk about the racism of Cape Town, for example, if you decide that's where I want to go.
Yeah.
I found that it was easier for me to say it being a woman in a floral dress to talk about it because people just go, oh, wow, that's outrageous. How can she say that? So it became a tool. And but people fell in love with the character.
Yeah.
And people fell in love. There's another character that we call a taxi gachi, collect fares on the taxi, Smiley. And I would say there's another character who's a cashier who's just crazy, Colin the cashier. And these three people say things that Mark the comedian would not be comfortable saying.
Oh, yes.
So I separate my worlds of the character and my world of the stand-up comic, you know. And like the show I'm doing now, it's straight stand-up. Well, I use the word straight loosely. Straight stand-up comedy, and you just go for 1.5 hours. And so people fell in love with Merle, and then she came back, and then the character was just, then people started saying, oh, we enjoyed the show, but where was Merle?
Yes.
And so through the years, I've made up her family, because you know you get bored on stage, and I've spoken about her husband.
And family grows. Anyways.
And yeah, and her daughter got married. So no, people have not met these. They were just figments of my imagination and everybody else's. And with a musical then, Anwar decided, he said to me, why don't you just write? You always complain when you go and watch musicals because I love great musicals, but I'm always saddened when I see so much talent in our country, but we insist on doing the international musicals.
Oh, yes.
There's a place for that, but we neglect.
My daughter was in Madagascar just the other day. I mean, it would have been dope for her to be in a local musical.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. You see? So, and we have this... I think, you know, because there's so many performers who need work.
Yeah.
And I'm not dissing the fact that people can go and audition for these great musicals, but you should see our people's faces light up when I present them with a script and they can use their own accents.
Oh, yeah.
And we have our own references. And we are as sexy as the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So when people from outside of South Africa came to watch you know, the Merle musicals, and it's not just my musicals, other local musicals as well.
Mm.
They get up on their feet and they cry and they applaud. So I think as South Africans, we need to work more on our appreciation for ourselves, to celebrate ourselves, to believe that we are sexy in the world and we can stand on world stages with our own accents, our own music.
And unfortunately, there's only been a handful of our popular stage culture that has been exported.
Yes.
And you know, outside of your King Kongs and your Lion Kings, perhaps,
yeah,
and your Sarafinas, we're not exporting enough of popular culture from the theatre.
Yeah, I think that that's got a lot to do with money.
Yeah.
You know, people have even asked if our show could travel.
I think it should.
It should travel, but it just costs so much money. And I always, you know, all my life, I've always slept with the wrong people. You keep thinking you're going to strike it lucky. he doesn't listen to podcasts. So it's about the money, and I think, but slowly, and things for me, as I've matured, you know, since the last time you met me,
yes,
my approach to my storytelling is different. The stuff I talk about has changed. And so it's been a slow process, but I think in the other spectrum as well, in terms of traveling with our stuff outside of the country, I'm feeling that I'm getting there now,
sure,
with my work, and I'm very excited about things happening now.
So obviously your partner, Anwar, is part of the team.
Yeah,
do you guys have
pretty much the boss.
I mean, do you guys have a role play? And he asks you to be smiley.
I don't know what's cuter, the actual question, or that you sat and thought about it and even did a little body roll. Do you role play? Are you going to let me in?
I'll be the driver.
I'd love to role play. I was very reserved. So no, there's no time for role play, but thank you for inquiring.
When do you workshop the characters if you're not going to role play them?
That's a madness. It's a madness in my head. It's a madness in my head. I can only, you know, I can only really go absolutely crazy with characters once there's a group of people sitting there watching me. Yeah.
Yes. Now, obviously with fame comes a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And sometimes relatives out of the woodwork. Have you ever had to deal with that?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
It continues. I mean, people come up to me a lot and say, hi, I'm a lottering. Or they go, you know, I knew. This is the best story for me, which I still can't figure out. I was doing an interview in El Dorado Park in Aldo's.
Yeah.
And this gentleman waited for me outside the studio, because he was listening in his car wherever he was, but he lived in the vicinity of the studio. And this happened just a year ago. And I came out and he waited for me and he said, I'm so proud to hear you, you know, because I remember you as a kid running in the street.
Oh, wow.
And I said, oh, you're from Cape Town? He said, no, from Aldo's. You stayed three doors away from
us. Shut up.
And I said, no, I'm from Cape Town. He said, yes, from Aldo's. Yeah, it was at my house. And I said, no. When he was done with me, I believed that I grew up in Aldo's. I actually called my brother and I said, are you sure? This man is convinced that. So, but he wasn't coming from a space of his family, but he just said that I grew up in his house. But there are lotterings who come. And then the odd thing is, there are white people who say to me, I'm a lottering, but they're excited. And only after they say it, can I see they realize what's going on. Because I go, oh.
You owned my great grandparents.
So you're lottering. Oh wow. So yeah, there are many lotterings.
No, I asked this because I don't know if you remember about 14 years ago, Beyonce's dad, Papa Knowles,
yes,
had an affair.
Yes.
From this affair, a child was born, Nixon.
Okay.
So now Nixon's mom is all over media over the past week talking about how Nixon keeps asking about his sister Beyonce, and the fact that he feels excluded.
How old is Nixon?
He's 13.
He's 13. Yeah, I think he suffers from not blue ivy, from green ivy, because he's green with envy. He's been watching, like we all have, because you know she's brought blue ivy onto stage.
Yeah.
So I think he wants to be her. Oh. He wants access to the traveling budget, to traveling the world, to the allowance. Because it's very interesting, because people who yearn for family, they seem to only yearn for wealthy rock star family.
Oh, yes.
You know, you never hear of just the average person.
It's like, I see you don't have any food.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's some money.
Exactly. So, nah, he wants, you know, the action. It's not, it's not bizarre for me. I can completely understand that that's what, you know, that's where Nixon's head is at. But I don't think Queen Bee is going to budge.
But also, surely it's Alexandra's responsibility to say to this kid that you are a result of me breaking up a family. So you are a love child. So unless your dad facilitates for a relationship, don't expect a relationship. Because now poor Queen Bee is under pressure to meet some kid that she never asked for a sibling from another woman.
Yeah. But you're making out as though Nixon's mommy is very rational and almost...
not attention-seeking.
Yeah, I love your perspective. You're giving her so much credit. I think she's sitting there next to Nixon, you know, and she's got a gun to his head, like phone them.
Yes.
Say the following, and she's holding it up.
Oh, man. Another story in the news this week, Gauteng Premier, my favorite. Listen, I need to just give a disclaimer. Banyaza Lesufi is my favorite premier of all premiers.
Okay.
When he was MEC, favorite MEC of all MECs. I think when he was spokesperson at the Department of Education in the late 90s, favorite spokesperson. So Banyaza is one of my favorite, you know, politicals out there. But anyway, so he's the Gauteng Premier, and he's been doing a jobs initiative called Nasispani. They had a big workshop on June 16 at NASREC. People were coming to apply for jobs, dropping off their CVs and stuff. He's also set up a task. It's like a little Banyaza army.
Yeah.
The Panyas. They enforce laws and order, law and order in the townships and informal settlements. But now this week, political parties are saying, but Banyaza is using state resources to campaign for the ANC. And it has me wondering, but when is he supposed to do his work then?
Yes.
Or are you saying before elections, no one should do that job because it might be electioneering? I don't understand.
Yeah, there's a magnifying glass just prior to elections on everybody, because I think people question everything that politicians do all of the time. And this has happened before. The closer we get to elections, you know, we've seen that in Cape Town as well. Suddenly, like... the roads are being resurfaced, and you know,
John Stevenson is coming to your show to give you a kiss.
There we go. Wow, John, how did you get backstage with this chick?
This is my situation.
Little contribution to the arts. And I remember us having a conversation, you know, I was sitting with my chomis and we were talking about this the last time.
Yeah.
And we were saying, the conclusion that we drew is, whatever it takes, if it is a tactic in your head that this is what you want to do to warm up to people who need to vote for you, but in the same time, stuff is being done.
Yes.
Great stuff. We are in the country, I say, whatever it takes. And you know, if houses need to be fixed and built...
Oh, they will
and,
be.
And you know, let them. Because now we're talking about real live humans who are going to benefit from that.
Yeah.
We need to obviously hold people accountable. This means that I'm in an adult interview. I've never used the word accountable. We need to hold people accountable.
Well done, comrades.
Afterwards, though, to say, finish the job. You know, you can't just build a house with one window and then there's the elections and you win the election and then that place is... I think that's where it comes in as well. But when it comes to providing young South Africans with skills and ultimately employment, these are important issues. So I don't think that political fighting, one party fighting the other, should get in the way of progress, whatever it takes.
Sure, absolutely. Final story from this week. Orlando Pirates are in Spain playing a soccer tournament. And one of the teams is from Israel, from Tel Aviv.
Yes.
So now there are especially your older, retired political veterans saying Orlando Pirates must boycott either the team, the fixture with the team within the tournament, or they must pull out of the tournament. And Orlando Pirates are saying, we're going to Spain because we're part of this tournament.
Yes.
We want to play this tournament.
Wasn't there, I mean, this is about the Israel.
Israel-Palestine.
Yeah, and who you support and what it looks like out there. I don't know. One of our Miss South Africans went to
Lalela. Yeah, her name is Lalela. Yes,
yes.
She went. Yes.
Yeah, and came back with nothing, I think. But I mean, it stays on your CV though that you went. You know, if you Google her now and talk about controversy, that's going to be there. You know that she went. But I don't know who Orlando Pirates is going to upset though. I mean. You're going to say Jewish fans would be upset if you boycotted the thing. But yes.
Yeah.
But when an Orlando Pirates is playing, I've never heard a whole lot of Jewish people in the stands, like, you know, Oy Vey or... So it's a bit of a...
Oy Vey.
Oy Vey. So I think you got to weigh it up. But for me, if I was the boss, I would say boycott it.
Okay.
So it's a... It's a stand that you take.
Sure.
Yeah.
But do you, for instance, there's an argument that there are ANC veterans who are saying they mustn't go, but the government, which is an ANC government, haven't boycotted Israel. Yes, they've downgraded the embassy, but they're still doing trade with Israel. So why would you expect a private soccer team to take a stand that you as a government haven't taken?
Yeah, so you're saying the government's not speaking with one voice.
So what I'm saying is, you know, the ANC veterans are saying this, but their mother body, which is government, are doing nothing about the same situation. Yes, they've said what they've said, but there's no policy that says we're not going to trade with them. We're not friends with them.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So why shouldn't a private team decide for themselves what they want to do? And if anything, if I was Pirates, I'd say we're going to play the tournament, but we're going to play with black armbands in solidarity with Palestine, for instance. That way you've made a statement, and I don't know how good they are, but or even say we're going to wear black armbands and we're going to kick their butts on behalf of, as opposed to...
Oh, wow, you're going to take it there. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to kick their butts.
Or we will play the tournament, but we won't play that match. Yes, obviously points will be docked for the match we miss, but we will go to the tournament, but we won't play that match.
You see, you're messing with my head now. You're way too intelligent about the whole thing. So I'm just going to bring it down to money. Are they going to be paid well? I've changed my thinking. I'm obviously just going to look into the financial benefits of this. Is there money involved? Ach, then just put your beliefs aside and go.
Is this smart talking now?
Yeah.
Just wait the money.
My brother, my colleague.
Listen, I know you need to run because you're a busy man. Where can people catch you, either on stage, on social media? What are you working on? I heard a rumor about a streaming deal, possibly.
Yeah. I'm going, everything's on marklotching.com. It's Mark with a C. And my tour dates for the whole year you can find on marklotching.com. So we're touring around the country at the moment with a stand-up show. And it's been absolutely...
So do you have dates offhand that you can share with us? For the tour?
Offhand, but I've got staff who deal with that.
I apologize.
Gosh, that's like expecting me to drive my own car. What are you? So, all the dates are on marklotting.com. Why would you put me on the spot like that? So, and then we are very excited because Auntie Merl, the musical, is that's going into filming quite soon. So Amazon came and saw the show
in Cape Town.
Yes. And so you're going to once again be making loans from me. You tend to do that every time I do well.
A whole Amazon.
So a whole Amazon.
When you did your online comedy show during lockdown, probably the most successful online comedy show.
That's when all the lotteries came to the fore because people were doing maths on Facebook while the show was happening. Wow.
So how many millions did you make?
Do you know, I don't do this for money. I do this for love. But I was exhausted from counting money. I had to go to the doctors to fix my fingers after that. Yeah,
your fingers are still counting.
Let me do it again. Okay. Wait, let's start again. Okay, 3 million. Okay, let me count from 3 million because I know about that.
Oh man,
we had a great time online. Yeah, that was wild and crazy.
What was the learning from that you feel other comedians need to maybe replicate?
I will never do anything that I feel other comedians need to replicate. I mean,
You must make the money.
No. All the learnings for myself, because you never stop learning. But I think, you know, during that time, during COVID, when we had to perform just to cameras and no audience, what I took from that is how comfortable and confident you've got to be in your story. If you believe that a story is funny.
Yes.
Because we are accustomed to, because the audience redirects my shows all the time.
It's the energy.
Yeah, that's, but that was suddenly gone for almost 2 years. Gone.
So just you unwind the cat.
And the two cameramen, the one was always Babalas because it was COVID, so he was drinking illegally the whole day. I managed to buy from him. And the other guy is just not interested in comedy. You know, you get those people who just go like...
Steel face. Yeah.
So I was so close to Jesus during that time because I'm dropping the punchlines to silence and I'm like, you know, it's between you and me, man. Yeah. This would better work. So I developed over that time, you know, it's very important when you tell, because if you see me on stage, I'm quite frantic.
Yeah.
I'm still frantic, but inside I've become a lot more calmer. I rest with the stories more and I go, if it doesn't work tonight, just tell it differently or take it out.
Yes.
I never used to be there. I used to be like that.
Yeah.
And during that time, you had to just be rooted.
Yeah.
Tell the story and believe in the funniness of the story.
Yes.
And you know, when you say what other people need to learn from that, maybe I should go there. At the same time, you must also then be confident enough to say, gosh, I'm not funny. I sometimes look at people and I go, is there nobody at home or at your braai telling you that you should do a first aid course or something? You can go and save lives. But but now don't take up that battery mic. We need that mic. We need that battery power.
Mark, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for your mind. Thanks for your creativity. Thanks for just being the super dude that you are, man.
Always liquor chatting to you. I've got big love and respect for you.
Well,
thank you.
If you're Monte Cassino this weekend, and go to marklottering.com, Mark with a C, to find out where else Mark, Merle, and everyone else will be in your neighborhood. Mark, thank you very much.
Love you. Thank you.
Mark Lottering has left the building.
This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. This kid...
Yeah!
Really kicks...
He's got a name that's easy to chant at a party. He's also got a name that's sort of appropriate, considering our power issues. However, listening to his output could probably put you in a lighter mood. Please give a wow welcome to Dark, a.k.a. Mulapo Malachi, a.k.a. Dark in Your City, a.k.a. Darky. Dark.
Yeah.
My dude?
I'm okay.
My man.
Lady said my name right, sir.
Which one?
Dark.
What do people call you?
Dark. Yeah, so dark.
I think when you read Dark in Your City, then it makes sense.
Yeah, true.
But I'm also not done introducing you. Co-founder of You Are, which is an event and TV program, resident DJ and organizer of the Kunye Music Festival, raised in Polokwane, one of four boys.
Yeah, one of four.
Jeez.
I'm the last born. Mama's baby.
Tell us about your childhood. Born and raised where?
Yeah, we four boys. Yeah. I'm the last born, raised by both parents. My dad, my mom.
Yeah.
And I had a pretty good upbringing, you know.
Okay. So you're born and raised in Polokwane?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Polokwane. I just went out of Polokwane high school.
Sure.
Studied somewhere else. Then varsity, came to Jersey.
Hmm.
So I'm a pure Polokwane kid.
What is the secret to surviving three older brothers?
I don't know. Just don't fight with them. Because I get problem. Older brothers are a problem. But me and my brothers are tight, man. Like,
sure.
If you see us hanging out, you think we're friends.
So what's the age range between
you? My older brother is like 44.
Yeah.
And the second one is like 40. And the third one is like 38.
Yeah.
So I'm 31. So it's balanced.
What did you look up to about your brothers growing up? that you said, this one is cool, I want to be like him because he does this like that. That one, I love this about him.
Yo, it's a lot. It's a lot because they all have different characters.
Sure.
The first one is so loud and so he's a people's person. The second guy is the school guy.
Sure.
The third guy is in between the two. And then there's me that's just different. So I just picked up characters, like different characters from all three of them. So I know what not to do from that other guy, that what to do from that
this one upset mama like this.
So yeah, I know. That's what I saw the whole time. I'm like, hey, this one does this.
So at the time growing up, what's the dream and the picture in your mind's eye about the rest of your life?
Like, you know, I think I've always known what I wanted to become, you know, like there's one brother of mine, the two brothers of mine, the elder brothers, they introduced me to music, and I watched people like Mzambia, Msawa making it at an early age.
Sure.
I was like, damn,
I want to.
This is doable.
I want to jump out of the bag and say yes.
yeah. So I was like, you can actually make it as a kid. You know, I've always wanted to make it as a kid. I think that's why I started working so early.
Okay, so you
stages of my.
So you were a wannabe child star.
Yeah, I wanted to. You so bad that I went auditioned for channels and your TV, those other things at a very young age. So I've always wanted to be.
But then you started dabbling in production and music in your early teens.
Yeah,
but take us through that.
Started making music at the age of 14.
Yeah.
My first release was at the age of 16.
So sure. What was that first release?
It was an EP on Infinite Records with Galawa. Yeah.
Yes.
So it was a time where Afro and Tribal was booming. So we call ourselves the class of 2008. It was myself, Kulo. It was a big pack of people. So we were dropping Tribal House at that time. So I was just 16. Yeah.
Let's talk about the importance of walking your own path, your own lane. So, for instance, you are part of the class of 2008.
Yeah.
And within that class, some started breaking out quicker than the others.
Yeah.
Some started doing overseas gigs quicker than
the others. Quicker, yeah.
So in your mind, as this is happening, that, for instance, now the world is waking up to a Culo de song.
Yeah.
What's going on in your head? See all of this happening.
You know, obviously, as a young guy, the pressure is there, right?
Yeah.
So, but I feel like I've myself, this is me now. I just took my seat and just watched everything happening.
Mm.
And I decided, you know what, I'm going to learn from everyone.
Sure.
And I'm going to be patient with myself because I have a plan, you know. So I'm not going to do stuff because people are doing stuff, and I'm not going to try and move this way because he's moving this way. So I've always knew I'm one person that believes in God's plan.
Sure.
I believe in God's plan, and I know if I put my head to something, it's going to happen. It doesn't matter when it happens, but it's going to happen. So I just took a seat back, watched everything happen, and I chilled about it, and I knew my time will probably come one day. So,
but you're also human, though.
Yeah.
There was never a point where you felt like, Mdimo, I know you've got a plan. I know you're King Kong, but why is mine taking so long?
It happens now still. It happens to the best. So it's normal. I feel like it's normal, but I just feel like you just need to say, hey, wait.
Sure.
Relax. Your life is not that bad. You know, you're working, and that's what keeps the fire burning. I'm like, you know, I look at myself.
Mm.
I look at myself then, and I look at myself now, and I'm like, you know what? Actually, don't put so much pressure onto yourself.
And we are so unkind to ourselves at the best of times.
Yeah, true.
Where if you counted your blessings, you'd actually realize that you're actually kicking ass.
Yeah. That's what I do. You know, I look at the positive more than the negative. I look at myself and I'm like, damn, I'm kicking ass. You know, I'm rocking and I'm not doing bad. I'm actually well.
Especially when you look at your career year on year, or from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and now, has there been growth? If there's been growth, then you're doing well.
Rapidly, but serious growth.
But often we spend so much time looking in the other lane.
That's what happens when you look at people. The next guy buys whatever.
You lose focus of your own lane.
And you know, people are doing other things.
As an inheritance.
Yeah, you know.
Bought a big car. So
I try to avoid that. I cut out the noise and just focus on myself and focus on working on what's good for me.
Where was the turning point in your music production career?
I don't know. I don't really know. Like, for me, every project is a turning point.
Okay.
Yeah. So, the last project I worked on was a turning point. It got me somewhere. Sure. It got me where I wanted to be.
What was the last project?
Before this one. It was Must Be Africa. Yes. It was Must Be Africa.
And who did you work with on Must Be Africa?
On Must Be Africa, I worked with Kitchen Mess, Black Liz is on the album. Kyle Deutsch is on the album. It's proper collabos that at that time I felt I needed to work with.
And you're scratching an itch.
Yeah. So it was at that time it was a turning point. It was like, okay, this is different from what I've done 3 years ago, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to try do this, and I did it at a time where hip hop was big, and I was like, okay. Who do I need to put on this album? And I tried to fuse it with what was happening then.
Yes.
So same as now, the same thing I did now. Current project was also a turning point. So
would you agree that it's easier to make movements when, like you've described, you turn every achievement into a milestone of sorts? That way you can see that incrementally I'm growing.
Yeah.
As opposed to we wait for the big thing to happen.
Yeah, I think that's what I do.
Yeah.
I don't, when I work, I don't count my eggs before they hatch. Like, I don't think about it as this big thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think about it as a milestone. Like,
sure.
This is what I want to achieve and this is what I'm going to do. It works, it doesn't work out, it's on me. I have achieved what's in my heart and what's in my mind. I want to do this.
Sure.
So that's how I look at it, and that's how I do things.
Or this is what I want to achieve today.
Today, yeah. Today, now.
Because we're in such a hurry to succeed, hope, to do the big things.
Get pressed.
That sometimes the little things you did on that one day, those are the incremental gains.
Yeah.
Because what you did today is more than what you did maybe all of last week.
That's true. That's why every day I work on myself. I wake up every day, I work on myself. I was just telling my guys and my team, you know, there's nothing that, I was angry the other day. I was like, there's nothing that pisses me off like someone that comes into my space and wants to treat my space like a hobby. Their hobby. Because I work on this thing every day. So
I give 100%.
Yeah, I give 100% every day because, you know, every day we need to do something. We need to do something that will get us somewhere someday. So it's not about Opopa like now. For Opopa, it's everybody wants Opopa.
It's about
the next step forward. But if you don't do it, work on it every day and you don't plan, you'll have a problem because some people just wake up, look for the next pop. Wake up, look for the next pop.
No purpose.
No direction,
no goal.
For me, I'm planning. I'm already planning for 2025.
Yes, sir.
I'm already ahead. So,
I hear you say you were angry the other day. I'm trying to imagine you angry because you look like such a chilled guy. What does angry dark sound like?
Yeah, it's crazy. You don't want. I hardly get angry, by the way, but. You know, with work, you need to push your people sometimes. You need to be like, hey, guys, get up. Let's do this thing.
But listening to you talk about, you know, you talking to your people and your team. I mean, looking back 10 years ago, did you ever think you'd even have a team?
I've always thought I would have a team, but I didn't have the resources at that time and the direction and the people to guide me on how to manage and how to build a team and how.
But the dream was clear, though.
The dream was clear. I knew. I'm one person that's obsessed with the music industry. So I look what you guys do.
Yeah,
I've always known you to have a team and a manager since.
Sure.
Yeah.
In fact, can we talk about that though? The importance of not only having a dream and a goal, but also having the discipline to get there.
Yeah.
What has it taken for you?
It's serious work. It takes a lot to be a leader, honestly speaking. You know, because your team feeds off from your energy. Mm-hmm. If they don't feel you, they don't do anything. So it just takes a lot of discipline. You can't tell your team, look, we're having tea at 1. This is what we do in this office. 1 o'clock is tea time. And at 10, you have your legs on the desk, you're having tea. You know, they're going to look around and like, but what's this guy doing? Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot of discipline. You know, you have to cut out a whole lot of stuff and you need to be the leader. Because at the end of the day, mm-hmm. with a career like mine, is you're the person they're working on. This mm-hmm. is not this company that they're working for.
Sure.
You are the company. So mm-hmm. you need to be disciplined and you need to be focused and you need to lead. So which is the most difficult part is the discipline and the leading. So for you to become a leader, it's a problem because you need to be spoken also. You need to be not be afraid to tell people what you want. Your team, you need to...
And not be afraid to tell them when they're fucked up.
Yeah, no, you need to say it straight up, like, my guy, this is not going to work.
Yes, I'm not going to break you.
No.
I'm going to tell you.
You tell them straight that this is not it. This is not what I want as Doc, you know, this is... And you need to learn to listen also because, you know, people, you bring in people in your lives to help you. So if you know you're going to shut them out and not listen to... what they say.
Because we're now maning, yeah.
No. You need to listen. If you need to equip them with anything. It could be with pens, it could be with thought. Just give them what they need to work on you.
Let's talk about your relationship with Shimza. How did you guys hook up?
That's my bro.
And how did it become what it is now?
Yeah, we've always known each other through the music industry, but we started hanging out like closely with each other when we're through his cousin Stan, so we were like, he's known me as a DJ, and I've known him as a DJ, and we would come across each other at parties and like events. I'd play after him, yo, my bro. Yeah, so we started hanging out, and he's like, one time he asked me, it was like years ago, he's like, bro, what are you doing now? I'm like, bro, just be honest, my things are not going well for me now. I can hardly keep up with my rent, my stuff. He's like, bro, come work with me. I need a road manager. I'm like, bro, that's actually a dope idea. You know what? I'm going to do it because I want to learn, you know?
Sure.
But let me tell you something. I'm going to do it for a period of time, learn, and I'm going to... He's like, bro, cool. I'm okay with that, you know? And some people don't even know it. At a time, I became Shimza's road manager.
Sure.
So I'll travel with him everywhere, have his bag, USBs, and...
Only speaker boy.
Gile road straight up, you know? And people were like, Doc, what are you doing? You know, because you're known to be a dope producer, you're known to be a dope DJ. What's going on? And I'm like, bro, relax. You know, some people... You know how people are, you know.
Or are you Owele?
Owele, no. Yeah, the my, you know. So I was like, I had an idea and I had a plan. I was like...
And sometimes, it doesn't matter how big you've become.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to step back.
Yeah, true.
To be able to jump forward further.
Back to the drawing board.
But because we have such pride issues... We have such big man syndrome.
Yeah.
You want to be the big man.
Yeah.
You don't want to be someone else's subordinate in order for that to be your springboard.
Yeah.
And I fully understand why you would do that. Because there's a word you used to use when you were doing a 100-meter race. We pace.
Yeah.
So you take a step back before you...
pace yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what you did.
That's what I did. I just literally became his road manager, traveled with him. And I got to see the other side of the world.
Yes.
And I was like... Wow, this is how it works.
This is the possibility.
This is the possibility. I've wanted something that I did not know anything about.
Oh, yes.
So now I'm looking at this thing and I'm seeing this thing. I'm like,
it's clear. Wow,
it's clear now. Yes. This is what. And I ask him, when I travel with him, I ask him, who's this guy? What does this guy do?
Sure.
He tells me, he's like, you know, this is who, this is this. And yeah, at the time where I felt, you know what, I'm cool.
Sure.
I went back to him. I was like, bro, it's that time now. I'm going to go back to doing what I do.
Yes.
He's like, bro. Now let's work on other stuff. It's not like...
I was going to say, even in the situation where you were in, had you not taken that leap of faith in yourself and a step back and step down, you wouldn't have learned what you learned.
Yeah, true.
And chances are you wouldn't be business partners.
True. We would. I don't think we would have. Because that me being his road manager... opened up another door. He just started trusting me with his life.
Yes.
It means now I can go to his house, get his 1-2. He can send me wherever he wants to send me.
So he's just picked it up. What happened to the G-Wagon since you have keys to the house?
I was out with him. That's the thing. With the G-Wagon, I was out with him, so I don't know anything.
So
we were in Europe. We were in Portugal when that happened.
So you have an alibi.
Yeah. I was out. We were out. I was with him when we got the information. Sure. So we were like, hey.
So what is your business partnership with Shimza? What do you guys work on together?
We work on a lot of stuff. Yeah. We have events. Mm. Wherever you are, we started Kunye. It started off with us. Business started with Kunye.
Sure. What is Kunye for those that know nothing about
Kunye? Kunye is a festival. It's an Afro festival.
Afro house?
Yeah, Afro house festival. Sorry. Yeah. It's an Afro house festival. It's a worldwide festival now. We just had a Kunye in Albania the other day.
It was so dope.
It was so dope, man. Yeah. It has grown so quick. So. Yeah. But besides the Kunye being a festival, Kunye is actually Shimza's label.
Mm.
It's a music label. He's been dropping music.
Sure.
Yeah, I have a drop coming out on Kunye. There's a lot happening with Kunye. So how we started becoming partners is we were chilling at my house.
Mm.
And we were working on stuff, obviously, just the little stuff. And it was lockdown. And we were like so bored and we were on YouTube watching. And we searched for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, yo, we haven't DJed in a long time. And sure. I'm like, yo, I haven't heard you play in a long time. And I searched for Shimza. And there's just a limited number of sets that I could find.
Mm-hmm.
And after Shimza said, we searched for Dark, we found like 3-4. And we're like, bro, actually, we don't have anything on YouTube that's ours.
Sure.
You know? We were like, let's just start something and start shooting this thing.
Yeah.
When we started Kunye, we started it off at our office.
Yes.
So we were like, I remember the first episode was myself, Shimza, and Dakapo.
Sure.
And three people at the back, you know. And it just started growing from there. When they eased up the lockdown restrictions, we started this whole invite thing. We started the private invite thing. We were like, and everyone was asking, hey, where is this happening? And we had these weird names. I remember Tulani, because Tulani had Tanzania. Yeah. He was like, no, that's France. So it's happening in Paris because we were trying to hide where it's happening.
Sure.
So it just got out of control. A lot of people started having access to it.
Sure.
So that's how.
And now it's a beast.
Now it's a beast.
And going global.
What's
the difference between Kunye and UR?
The difference between Kunye and UR is, you know, when we started Kunye, we focused more on the festival vibe, people standing.
Sure.
And I remember the first Kunye, we had so many challenges in terms of seating.
Mm.
And we don't want to put in too much seating because we wanted to have that festival.
It's a festival. There must be rocking.
And then that's where it hit us with UR, that we can actually have best of both.
Two properties.
We can have one where it's still Afro house music, but it's got an element of this current lifestyle to it.
Mm-hmm.
People that, you know, you have people that drink expensive champagne, people that want to be seen with the coolest people,
yes.
Want to rock up with the coolest and hottest chick.
Mm.
You know, we created that vibe. Afrotech did not have that vibe.
Yes.
We took that vibe and we merged Afrotech to it. So sure. We were like, let's see if it works. And it worked. Mm. You know, we got to our first UR at the rooftop. We were selling champagne. We were like, okay, let's add this whole sparkler thing now. Let's do this. Add a cool lifestyle to it because we feel like that's what the music lacks. Mm. You know, we were holding on to the music so much, and that's how the other guys were beating us.
Yes,
they were like they plug in the music everywhere. Mm. The music's got a lifestyle that goes with it. Mm. Hip hop's got a lifestyle that goes with it. Yes. Amapiano's got a lifestyle that goes with it.
So
what about us?
Yes.
We need to create a lifestyle for us. We need to make it cool.
Sure.
So we had the coolest people coming to UR. Mm. You find someone you don't even expect there, and they're like, bro. You know,
including politicians.
Yeah. Including, so they're like, you know, this Afrotech thing is not that bad.
Yeah.
This music is nice. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's.
Okay,
it's,
so in a nutshell, then,
yeah.
Kunye is for the culture.
Yeah.
UR is to make a buck.
guys, we are not making my please to come. Come to your.
Before we let you go, you've got an album that is out.
Yeah.
Easily contender for album of the year in this country. Easily. If not in Afro House for the year.
Yeah.
Tell us about that album.
More Life. That's the album.
Yes.
More Life is my latest album, man. It's such a dope album, as you say.
Dude.
I feel the same.
Album of the year contender.
Let me be honest with you. It's the first time, right? I feel. What you just said.
Yeah.
I feel like it's an easy contender for album of the year.
Yeah.
Because when I feel like it's the first time in my life.
Sure.
I make an album that I can listen to it without thinking on how I could have done this or could have improved it. It just sounds perfect.
So it's ready.
It's ready.
Because sometimes you release a song, but you listen back
and you're like, months.
It's like, I should have actually.
Yeah, for me, I feel like it's ready. And the people that are on the album, the collaborations that are on the album.
Who's on the album?
So dope. Sjava stands out. Sjava on the album stands out because it's the first house song he's been on.
Yeah.
He's ever been on.
And he killed it.
He killed it, man. Yeah. Amazing. I was so nervous. I was like, I wonder what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And he just delivered it. So it's been years coming. My collaboration with Sjava has been, we've spoken about it years ago. So
sure.
It's only happening now. And it's a Marumba Peach also. They're so dope.
Super talented.
They my favorite also.
Yeah.
And also Blackie. Blackie being on an Afro House album.
Oh, yes.
Like, wow. So
yes.
So it's the album was just well thought of and well planned. It sounds amazing. I love it. It's my favorite album.
So are you ready for the critical acclaim and the awards this album should pick up?
Yeah, I'm more than ready. Eh?
I'm sure.
I'm just not.
I'm sure you walk around with a speech in your pocket.
No. That's the thing. I'm not
a war ceremony.
I'm not invested in that because I know what life can do to you. Eh?
Yes,
if you invest too much into those things, they'll disappoint you and you'll become just so bitter and whatnot. So,
but the album is out every digital platform. Yeah. It's available there.
The album is out and. Every digital platform. Please stream the album.
Yes, sir.
Download the album. Buy the album.
Mm.
Yeah.
Tell your grandmother about the album. Play it for her.
Please, she'll like it. She'll like it.
Where do we find you next? Like, either the next big event you're doing, or are you traveling? Are you touring?
Yeah, I'm touring now. I'm promoting the album. So the next big show we're doing is UR in September.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, UR is also, we've grown it now in terms of numbers. So we're turning into a pretty much a lifestyle festival.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, the next one is in September. Mm. So, yeah.
Are you guys going to book me?
Bro.
Mama, I was asking.
Every time I try to get you on UR, you're in Venda somewhere. So.
My man, one of us must stay in Limpopo.
Yeah.
You left Limpopo, so now one of us must go.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, let's do it, though.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay, no, done deal.
Cool. Done
deal. And then social media, where do we find you?
Social media, you can follow me at Dark City. That's at DRQUECITY.
Sure.
That's my Instagram. Mm. Twitter also, DARQUECITY. That's at Dark City. Or you can like my Facebook page.
Sure.
Just Dark, DARQUE.
Sure. Yeah. My dude, thank you for hanging out with us.
Thank you.
My man, you kick ass. And I don't even think you are ready for how high you're going to fly.
Watch
this space and watch your own space.
Man, those are blessings.
That's from me to you, my dude.
Thank you so much. I take that.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dark City is about to leave the building. It's been a cold, dark week, literally. We hope you don't let it dampen your spirit. We hope you find ways to push through. We hope we've helped lighten things a little so far. And we hope you all have a wow week ahead. In spite of yourselves, we're out of here. Shout out to our guests, Mark Lottering and Dark City. Shout out to Amp Studios, Pezulu for our cinematography, Africa Podcast Network, our imaging guy. Our imaging guy, he did all of this.
This is
Artist The Flow Fraser, shout out to you, my dude. Love, love, love you. Creative director, Kuvesh Mohan, and our show producer, Keletso Modisa Gang. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. We're out of here.